everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Caffeine Before Bed. This week, we're switching topics to jobs. That's something that we all have to deal with throughout life, looking for jobs, trying to figure out how to apply, what to look for. And so this week, I have Russell Hatcher with me. Russell, thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your situation right now. I know it's a little bit of, you know, in flux a little bit, but kind of what you've been working with.
My situation is I am unemployed.
The best time to look for a job, though. So
great advice for everybody. Yeah, I was let go about a month and a half ago from a small, pretty young company. I guess they still called themselves a startup, and we're still running on, and are still running on, investment funds and not profitable yet. They've been going for about 4 years. And I had a very short run with them from March to December. I think they were very optimistic about some incoming funds and their revenue targets. And that just didn't happen in 2023 for them. So it was the second round of layoffs that they had had. And so it was really fun working with them. But now I'm on the hunt again, kind of. I'm in a kind of a weird spot timeline-wise.
Right, because you said that you're kind of looking at going to law school, right?
Yes.
So yeah, you've already been out of school for about how many years?
I graduated in 2018, and it is now 2024.
So about 6 years.
Yep.
And so just a quick aside before we get into the job part, how has the decision to go back to school, what's your thought process been in that? Because I know that's kind of tough to be in the job, you know, in the workforce, and then say, all right, I'm going to kind of have to pull out of that maybe a bit and then go back to school. So what's the thought process been behind that?
Yeah, there are a couple contributing factors to that. The decision to head back to school and specifically do law school has been a long one coming. It was not something I was planning on doing or something that was on the radar at all until probably 3 years ago or something like that, 2 or 3 years ago. So it wasn't like during my undergrad I was planning on doing more school. After my undergrad, the job opportunities I had all kind of just fell in my lap, and I just, by happenstance and God's providence, ended up kind of in a little bit of a niche that helped get me to the next opportunity, the next opportunity. And so law school was, the decision to look into law school at all was kind of totally separate from that, totally separate interests. Just as I've always been trying to think through, okay, what do I want to do? And trying to find something that I would be interested in and happy to give myself to in a very full way, for decades. And I found, groups that do something called public interest litigation. There are libertarian and conservative groups, and basically they specialize in suing federal, state, and local governments on overreach issues. And
okay.
They just sue the government. And that really resonated with me, especially coming out of, COVID stuff and things like that. I think people who like rules are lame, and we have too many rules, and people just keep writing more and more rules so that they can make more and more money. And I would be all about getting rid of some rules.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So with that being your kind of your new horizon you're looking towards, what's some advice you could say kind of looking back on your career, your job career, and then, you know, applying for jobs. We'll kind of get into both those. We'll start with what would be your advice, kind of people looking to get into the job world?
Yeah. So my caveat with this is I didn't have a specialized education for like a specific trade.
Right.
And I did not have a particular thing in mind going into school. So this is probably a little bit less relevant if you're, you know, you want to be a computer scientist for a really large corporation. Maybe right. this advice is different, but all the jobs that I have gotten have come out of very close personal connections and recommendations where people are doing something and I have a good connection with that person, or they know somebody who I have a good connection with, and there's the groups that I've ended up working with, they are small enough that they can't afford a bunch of specialized people to do okay. a bunch of different things. And they can't afford a young, inexperienced person who's willing to figure out how to kind of do a bunch of those things okay. and get them in an early stage for a company. That's really helpful. And then they have to figure out what to do with you as things grow mm-hmm. and they need more specialized, and they can afford more specialized work.
So you're essentially a startup specialist. You're good at a lot of things in a startup period.
So, yeah. I'm trying to remember, what was the, ask the
just question. Some advice for, people going into the job market for the first time. Maybe not, people that have been at Amazon or Google for 20 years, but people that are hopping out of mm-hmm. out of college or maybe even out of high school looking to get a start. Yeah, I mean, you kind of got into it a little bit with, networking.
Yeah, and I mean, networking is thrown out there. I never liked the term networking at all, but it is something you need to do. But it doesn't mean go meet a whole bunch of people. It really just means keep your eyes open. Like, if you're being a good Christian, then you're going and meeting people, and you should be interested in what other people are doing. And they're, look for people who are doing things, and ask them about what they're doing. And opportunities will come out of that. And especially early on, what you need to do, even if you do have some super specialized degree, you need to have done something for somebody. That was helpful, and you can explain how it was helpful, and they can explain how it was helpful, and then you have something to show the next person where it's like, I can actually do something. And it could be a really simple thing, but show that you can actually do something. And so look for opportunities where you can do stuff for free or for very little pay if you have to. But find things that you can actually do. And to do that, you need to find people who are doing things.
Right.
So that's, that would be probably my biggest piece of advice. It's just, it's hard to, I think a lot of people will say, they want to do something. So they're like, okay, I need to go develop this specific skill set, and I need to take these courses, and it's going to look like this, and then someone will hire me. And you should be developing your skill set for sure. But that your skill set isn't going to be enough. You need to have done something.
So you're saying it's more of a boots on the ground kind of thing rather than a, training primarily. Obviously you're going to have bits of both, but you want to focus on getting something done, getting something out there.
Cause ultimately that's what matters. Like at the end of the day, people who pay them to do things and to actually get things done. And a lot of people don't actually get things done. And so if you can have things on your resume where even if they're just projects and it's not full-time employment, and you can somehow quantify how that was valuable to whoever was employing you. It also makes interviewing a lot easier if you can actually speak to particular projects or things that you built or created for your company,
mm-hmm.
How you made things more efficient or whatever. It just makes it makes interviewing way easier because you're able to bring relevant information. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And so then, if that's your advice to people going into it, then what would you say your process of actually going in to interviews looks like?
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe a little bit of resume building, but then you get the interview, and what does that look like for you?
Mm-hmm. When I interview with people, obviously, review the job, review the company.
Mm-hmm.
Be really familiar. So I make sure I'm really, really familiar with their job posting and make sure that I'm familiar with their company and what they do. And then I will make sure they're not going to, work directly off of the job description, but you should use it to your advantage. And so I'll go through their job description. I'll jot down notes where, like we were just talking about, I'll try to find connections between what they're looking for and where that overlaps with things that I've already done. And how much can I map, how much can I make this job description map onto things I've done for other companies?
Mm-hmm.
So I can give, every time they have a question about something, I can give a real life example. And I'm not just having to say, yeah, I'm really hardworking and I can figure that out. That's great, but if you can, people resonate much more with actual specific examples.
Right.
So, having those ready, and then, I don't know how much this is helpful, but it definitely makes things less uncomfortable, is make sure you always have intelligent questions to ask, because they always will ask you for your questions at the end, and it's just awkward if you don't have questions. So even if you don't have questions that you need to be answered, come up with questions that sound intelligent and sound like you're interested.
Give us an example of an intelligent question.
I'm thinking of bad examples that I've seen before. So like, ask questions that are really specific to the role and specific to the company and show that you have some experience. So, I was applying for a job that was working in fulfillment coordination with a bunch of, it would have been a bunch of third party warehouses across the country.
For FBM?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. But, and so I asked them, I had questions about like where your facility is located, how many hubs do you guys have, what kind of software are you guys using to manage those systems?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one, it's a question that they can act, there's actually an answer to. It's not like how, it's not really asking about like company culture or like,
right.
But there's not really an actual answer to that. Like, is your, how is your company culture? It's great.
Yeah. You're just going to get the sticker response
yeah.
there.
So it's an actual question. It gives, and it shows you can use your questions to imply that you have actual experience.
Because
if you're asking questions that you are only a, someone who's done a certain kind of work is going to be the only person who knows to ask those kinds of questions. Right?
Okay.
And so you want to ask those kinds of questions where they show, one, I'm interested. Two, I'm actually thinking seriously about this job. And three, I actually know something about this field, and I'm asking a question that shows that I actually know something about
this. Interesting. So, and that, I'm sure you could also, if you don't have any going into the interview, and you probably should, but if you don't, I'm sure you could also, you know, what you're saying, if you've mapped, if you've already done your homework and you've mapped stuff to yourself, and that stuff, and you're invested in the interview, you should be able to pull something out of that and be able to kind of expound on that a little bit.
You should. But it's hard, yeah. But it's hard, like, you just asked me to come up with a question, and it took me a while. And it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And people are really subjective, and if you have an uncomfortable interview, that's not great.
Right.
You want to connect with the person, and so I would have questions ready, because they will always ask you for questions. And it's just really uncomfortable if you don't... It just sounds like you don't really care.
Yeah.
If
it's like, oh, no, that's
no,
all
I don't
I
have any questions. And it's like, well, you probably should, because you're applying for a full-time job, so you should have some questions.
Yeah, this is going to be 40 hours a week for,
yeah.
you know, a couple years at least. So you'll probably be at least somewhat invested in kind of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
So are there any... Let's see, we've gone over job application. What do you say... Here, we'll go into this. What are your views on, you get the job, you get a job offer, whatever, you've gone through the interview process, how do you approach the first couple days, weeks of complete unfamiliarity with your new position?
Mm-hmm. That is a good question. I think this is probably going to be different for different personalities.
For sure. And it'll be different job
yeah.
as well. But
my personality, I like to know everything and not be in uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And when I start a job, I will be worrying about all the things that I'm forgetting and all the things that I don't know. And I think it's important to not worry about that, because it doesn't matter how smart you are or how hard you work in the first week or the first month. You're going to look back on that in 5 months and be like, yeah, I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't really understand how all of this fit into the big picture, and now I do.
Right.
And that's totally fine. So I think being comfortable with that makes you a more comfortable person and makes you easier to onboard with whoever's in charge of onboarding with you,
mm-hmm.
of onboarding you. Especially if you're working for a smaller company, the person onboarding you doesn't have time to onboard you full-time.
Right.
They are doing their job, and they're trying to bring you along. And so the more comfortable you can be with uncertainty, the easier it will be for them to onboard you. If you are, you know, be comfortable asking questions, but also be comfortable asking the question, having a little bit more uncertainty, and just doing your best at something. And then you can course correct mm-hmm. as you get feedback from them. I think, yeah. And that's the biggest thing is, yeah, be comfortable. Know that you're not going to have all the information and have all the context for everything, and just do the things that have been set in front of you to the best of your ability. And yeah, I think that's what I would say.
Okay. So then as you go forward, what you're saying is you be patient with incompetence might not be the right word, but it kind of illustrates it. At the very beginning, you're not going to be at the top of your game. So be patient with that. You'll get it,
mm-hmm.
and don't beat yourself over the head with it. And I think that's valuable for two reasons, because I'm the same way. I like to know things to reduce uncertainty, mm-hmm. because then I can act with, you know,
mm-hmm.
propriety. And so I think that's good, because I would be tempted to do that. But then, you know, the challenge comes with, you know, drinking from a fire hose right at the
yep.
beginning, because there's so much to do and so much to learn. Is there anything that you would prioritize, and again, this is going to be
mm-hmm.
different by the job, but is there something that you would say, try to focus on doing X and Y first to kind of, you know, maybe get more comfortable?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that, because it would be totally specific to
okay.
the
That's
company.
Fair.
But I do think, I mean, two other things come to mind. One that kind of answers that question is, like, hopefully whoever is onboarding you can give you some small things to do, and you can actually get them done, and you should focus on getting those things done.
Right.
And make sure that the little things that you are given, make sure you get them done, and especially because you don't have that much going on, get them done quickly and get them done well. The other thing that's on the flip side of don't stress out and don't be an annoying, nervous person. The other side is, don't hide. It's easy when you're onboarded. You can kind of just, you don't have any responsibilities right away, usually. And you can kind of just be a quiet person and hide. And don't do that either. You know, meet people and talk to people and be comfortable and normal. And look for work to do. Look for things you could do. I have seen people give helpful advice when it comes to looking for things to do to balance that out. Look for work to do and look for things that you can do right off the bat.
And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier, like be doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shouldn't just be something to get the job. It should also be characterizing you as you work,
yep.
be doing things. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, that's kind of the point of work, is to
yep.
be doing something. But
and I mean, everybody's going to say this, but ask lots of questions. Like, ask the questions that you need to ask so that you can quickly get an understanding of how all these things fit in context. And don't be annoying in the way you ask questions. But ask people how things fit into their systems. And
yeah. I think that's one of the hardest parts for me, for one major reason. I fall on the side of not asking a question because I don't want to be a bother to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I have to really struggle and try to figure it out on my own, which isn't really a good thing. So it'd just be easier
yep.
if I did it, but I don't want to be a bother. So asking the questions is a good thing, but I'm so afraid of being that annoying guy. Like, hey, can
yeah.
you just, you know, I don't know how to do this. Can you do this? And
yeah.
they're in the middle of, you know, doing
yep.
something that they actually know how to do. So
yeah. And because of that, like, ask questions and write down the answers. especially when you, like, you should have tons and tons of notes when you start a new job. This is especially for, this is probably a little less relevant if you're talking about more senior level positions and you're an experienced person and you're going into some specific niche within a company. But if you're a young person and you're, you know, you're kind of there to do initially whatever grunt work they need you to do. When you ask someone, hey, I've been asked to do this, and you have a specific question about how to do that, make sure you write down what they tell you, because you will forget the next time you have to go do it, and you don't want to have to go ask again.
Yeah.
So write things down.
That is, I have had a job where I didn't write it down, and I sat there because I knew that I had already asked, and I really didn't want to ask again. And just sitting there, desperately trying to come up with the answer. I don't remember if I pulled it off or I had to go ask again. I probably had to ask again. But then it also shows to the people above you that you're paying attention, you're working hard, and you're not just, you know, relying on them to essentially do your job for you. But is there any, have you left a position voluntarily, or have you just been, you know, the ship goes under and you just kind of have to sink with the ship?
This is the first time that I left involuntarily. Okay. My first job out of college was I don't even know what the job was. It was a corporate job in a communications department, and we didn't really do anything. I was super bored, and so I was looking for something else to do. And so I found an opportunity, and I wanted to move back to Seattle anyways. And so that I went looking for. But it was an opportunity, again, that opportunity kind of just came to me initially, and then I followed up on it, you know, a year later. And that was when I was working at Tenacore.
Okay.
And then worked at Tenacore for a while, at least for me for a while. That means like a couple years. And then that was a combination of, I kind of wanted to, I felt like I was underperforming and I was kind of in my head and weird. And I was kind of looking for a way to shake things up and go do something else. And then that was kind of confirmed. Well, not necessarily confirmed, but that decision was made for me because the company decided they were going to relocate and I didn't want to relocate.
Right. So then how did you go about, this is kind of, there's two sides to the job part that are the hardest part. One is the getting in, the other is the getting out. So how have you navigated, this job isn't right for me, for whatever reason, you've said, you know, location and what you've been doing, which are kind of the two big reasons to leave, other than, you know, culture, which is another big part. But you have these motivations to leave. How did you navigate that both, you know, socially? You didn't just say, all right, have a nice life, I'll see you around. But then, so you have to navigate that part, but then also professionally, how to, you know, be graceful in your departure and then also find a new job after that.
Yeah. I mean, the easy part of that question is doing it gracefully. If you're going to leave, if you've been doing your job well, you leaving is going to create at least some temporary problems, right? Because you do things.
Right.
And so you should be very proactive about mitigating those problems and making the transition as smooth as possible. So every time when I left Tenacore and when I left Cafe Luso and when I left Caddis, which was the last company, I spent the last, you know, depending on the timeline, somewhere from a week to a month documenting systems and buttoning systems up. Because there'll always be, we're all lazy. And so a lot of the work that I'll end up doing is you're just keeping various day-to-day operations going and you don't take the time to create really great systems that you could pass off to anybody at short notice.
Right.
And you don't do it just because you don't have to do it today and you know how it all works. And so you just do it.
Right. It's pragmatic.
Yeah. And so a lot of what you can do to be helpful is take the time to build those, put those systems in place, put things in writing so that whoever's going to take your place can step into that mm-hmm. quickly. I would be curious. I mean, this is, I've never, so the two times that I've like seriously left a company where it was like, it was still a good opportunity at the company. It was a good fit. The company was going in a good direction and I still decided to leave. I never spoke to my supervisor about it before I had made the decision. And for me, that's just because I'm really bad at making decisions. It's hard. It takes me a long time to make a decision. And so I like to make sure, like, okay, I've made the decision, I've already committed, and I'm just going to tell them that this is what I'm doing so that I don't get confused and mm-hmm. swayed again.
So you don't have to come back to them later and be like, all right, well, yeah. I'm not actually leaving. That doesn't
kind of... Yeah, but I feel like some people would say, and this might be true, there might be some immaturity in that, where if you have a good, if you trust the company and your, and specifically your supervisor or your team, and they think you think they have your best interest in mind, it might be more mature to talk to them about it and say, talk to them about, these are the things I'm thinking about. I think I'm interested in this. Because when you, each company you're with and each job you have is going to have its challenges, and or you're just going to get bored at different times, and that's just going to be the nature of work at different times.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily, the answer to that each time is not, okay, time for a new company, right? Okay. And so I wonder if I missed out on some important conversations because I wanted to just make a clean break or just do the next thing. So I'm still not quite sure if the timing of those things was right or
mm-hmm.
how that worked out. So I would throw that in there where maybe a more mature person would say, you trust the people, then, and you are struggling with the decision, then talk to them about it and say, I'm thinking about these things and looking at these other opportunities, and what do you guys think? And
mm-hmm.
that might help you have a longer, in the long term, have a more mature career path instead of hopping around.
Right.
So.
It might strengthen those relationships as well. Yeah. Like long later down the road, I know my father has done a bunch of startup stuff, and he's gotten a couple jobs because people he's worked with, and more often than not, the companies he's worked for have, you know, gone underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people he's worked with, had that good relationship with, talked about, hey, this company is making a break for the bottom of the sea. We gotta, you know, look for something else. And it's that, those conversations and the work relationship that you have with people. Later on down the line, they're at a good company. They say, hey, that guy was a good worker. He had a good work relationship with us. We should contact him and see if he's interested in work.
Mm-hmm.
So that can also, I could see that being a positive down the road as well.
Yep.
So then, back to the original question. How would you navigate the professional side of leaving? I know you said you button stuff up, but
yeah,
like in looking for a new job, how do you kind of go into a new company saying, "Yeah, I'm leaving this company and I'm looking to work for you guys"?
Mm-hmm. Nobody likes complainers. I mean, complaining people are the worst people to work with and the worst people to work for. So don't complain about your company to other people. You're going to have to answer the question, why are you leaving that company? And you should have honest answers, but you should do it in a way that is not, you can be critical, but you should not sound like a complainer.
Yeah, it should be derogatory.
Yeah. And so, because you don't, yeah, if you sound like a dissatisfied person, a smart person is going to identify that and realize that you're just a dissatisfied person and you're going to be dissatisfied after a year of working with them.
Right.
But you are going to need to answer the question. And so you're going to want to have, you're going to want to have positive answers about why you are interested in the opportunity with the new company. And you're going to want to be able to identify some real reasons for leaving your current company. And that could, you know, that could be, I've always worked for really small companies and that I've learned some things about that and I'm looking to grow my experience and work with a larger group because I think that'll stretch me in new ways and I want to have that experience. You know, things like that, or that's kind of been the most common thing for me is just like an easy go-to. Cause I've worked for really, really small groups.
Right.
So that's an actual reason that makes sense. And I don't, doesn't really require any criticism of a
right.
smaller company. I have talked about leadership at companies before where it's like the people at the company are great. Everybody's really nice. I don't feel like the company has really, really strong direction. And I'd like to be at a place where there's a stronger, consistent direction.
Mm-hmm. And some of the consistency you've mentioned with these examples has been not necessarily a dissatisfaction with your previous company, but a hope for a positive change with this new company. Basically,
yeah.
you're putting this new company in a positive light. Like, hey, I'm going to look to grow my personal career
yeah.
here, or I want a company with stronger direction, or that allows me more creative freedom, or something like that, that puts them in a good light.
Yeah. Yeah, if your only reason is my boss micromanages me, I wouldn't hire that person, because that just sounds to me like you probably think that everybody micromanages you, because you don't like to do work, would be my conclusion.
Yeah.
Just if that's what someone said. And so, yeah, I would... Yeah, have positive reasons for why you're looking for the next thing.
And there's a level of diplomacy, obviously, that comes to that. Like, your boss could have absolutely micromanaged you, but you don't phrase it like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. There's some tact that I'm sure comes into it all. Was there anything else that you think would be some nuggets of wisdom to throw before us? Any insightful, intelligent questions to ask?
I don't think so. I think, yeah. Just looking like... So I've been... Yeah, every job I've gotten up to this point has been just through connections that just kind of happened upon me. And I think I've seen a lot of other people post about that, where it's like, for a whole lot of jobs, you're... throwing in an application, your odds are just really, really low. And sometimes, and I've done a whole bunch of that, sometimes that's what you need to do. But your odds are going to be a lot better if you can identify some connections and get a really strong referral from someone. The only like great interviews I've had in the last month or so, one was, I didn't have a connection with the company, but I was able to write a really strong cover letter because what it was enough. All the companies I've worked for have been like, they've been consumer products that are premium brands where the brand is a really, really important piece of it.
Okay.
So it's those kinds of companies, and they're small, and I work in the operations world. And so with one of these companies, I was able to call out all three of those things.
Okay.
With that company and identify, and I think that's what got me that interview, whereas it just mapped really, really, really well to exactly what I've been doing up to
right.
this point.
Yeah.
And in that I was able to, I think, identify what was important to them and what they were doing. And then the other one that was the only really good interview I've gotten was just because on a total coincidence, I'd never heard of the company. The guy looking at the resume recognized New St. Andrews and had worked and had an employee from there before and was interested in talking to me. And it wasn't, he's not a Christian and he doesn't know what New St. Andrews is. He just knew this other employee and he thought she was awesome. And so I got an interview, and that's just things like that.
And by the grace of God, we're thankful for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, appreciate you coming on. Thanks for your wisdom. And yeah, with that, gonna end it there. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.